I'm Callie Crossley. This is Boston Public Radio. Tomorrow night, Frontline will run its new documentary on PBS. It's titled Endgame, AIDS in Black America. Let's listen to a clip from the film.
You look at the AIDS epidemic in Black America, and you think about Black America as if it were a country unto itself, it would have the 16th worst AIDS epidemic in the world.
Renata Simone is here with us. You wrote, directed, and produced this documentary. It's about AIDS in Black America. And I want to emphasize that because people are accustomed to thinking about AIDS worldwide. How do we get here?
Callie, thank you for having me and thank you for your interest in the film. It's how did we get here? I think it started in the 80s, and that was the most important time because that was when HIV spread undetected, unnoticed in the Black community, when church leaders wouldn't take it up as an issue, when political leaders, Black and white, but in this case talking about the Black epidemic, Black leaders did not take it up as a cause. And it was a time when the virus spread and dug into the community. And that's really why the transmission is what it is today.
As so much of the beginning of the film deals with how the information finally sort of sunk in to the community, and how people were just sort of not just ignorant of it, but just at a loss, just even while over across, you're in Oakland, across the bridge in San Francisco, there's plenty of public service going on about this.
Right, right. I think people were very frustrated. Those who knew, they couldn't scream loud enough. They couldn't make a difference. And there was the culture of silence and the oppression of stigma that kept people from taking action in their own lives and helping to protect other people. So
let's talk about that silence. Here's another clip from the film, and we hear the voice of Phil Wilson of the Black AIDS Institute talking about it.
We all grow up, you know, with don't put your business on the street, you know, and don't hang out your dirty laundry and all these phrases around keeping secrets. You don't tell other folks how poor you are. You don't tell other folks, you know, that you can't pay the rent. You don't tell other folks, you know, that so-and-so is sick. And you certainly don't tell other folks that there's a gay son. And you don't tell other folks that someone in the family has AIDS.
I thought that was just right on point. And it very much is a cultural phenomenon.
And remember the rest of the quote where he says, going all the way back to slavery, where you didn't tell the master what was going on in the slave quarters because to speak meant to risk punishment. And he says, now thank God, this is his quote, thank God that's not the way it is today, but some of that baggage travels with us. And I think, you know, coast to coast, people would say that. Gail Wyatt, the terrific researcher about sexuality and women's issues, you know, many people mention this, and I think it's just something we don't want to deal with. We still don't want to look at the legacy of slavery, and this is part of it.
So your film, and I should note that you've done another huge film looking at AIDS worldwide, so this is not something that's unfamiliar to you, so you understand the context of what's going on in America. In 2004, were you struck when Gwen Ifill of PBS asked the question in the vice presidential debate? And here's the question. She said, Mr. Vice President, I want to talk to you about AIDS and not about AIDS in China or Africa, but AIDS right here in this country, where Black women between the ages of 25 and 44 are 13 times more likely to die of the disease than their counterparts. What should the government's role be in helping to end the growth of this epidemic? As people may recall, neither one of them knew what in the world she was talking about.
I had to scrape myself off the floor. You know, it was stunning. And what happened, making The Age of AIDS, which, as you know, was a global series, we went to 17 countries, was we were sitting in the editing room, and I just thought, I cannot do this without going to the Deep South. We have got to cover what's going on in the U.S. So, you know, a two-hour film, we grew out of going down to Selma. A two-hour film came out of a two-and-a-half-minute segment. Because for Age of AIDS, I went to Selma, I saw what was going on there, realized it was the touchstone for the whole epidemic in the U.S., and really promised then to go back. And it took all those years to gather the funding and then make the film. There it is.
Your characters are so strong, and speaking, pivoting off that silence that we talked about, what you've managed to do is get people to be on camera, mm-hmm. not in shadow, to talk about having the illness and how it affects them. And I was particularly struck by some young men who call themselves the Bornies. And these were kids who were born with AIDS. And so here's a clip with the young men talking about that.
The song is called The Darkest Pain, and it explains how I have a little brother that died from AIDS and how my mother passed away and sort of how I felt about that.
Night sweats woke up to a nightmare just to realize what you petrified about is living right here. Mom losing weight, she's only 26 years old and she's dying of AIDS. Come up, came back rougher. Life switched up.
I think I was maybe probably like 5 or 6 when I knew that I had HIV, but I did not understand exactly what HIV was and what it did to the body.
Being born with HIV is a lot. I was the last one born in my family, and I was the only one born with HIV. And my mom at the time was not doing well. She was doing drugs, I believe, so she couldn't take care of us. So they put us into foster care.
Now, a couple of points that he raised there. First of all, you know, you're this just really likable kid who, you know, had no fault of his own. Here he is. The second thing is he referenced that whole drug trade business in the 80s, as we've talked about. And I think a lot of people, I certainly hadn't put all the connection in place, did not connect the AIDS epidemic with what became a crackdown in black communities about crack cocaine. Now, it was appropriate for the crackdown, but it was so heavy-handed and so different in what people would have to suffer as punishment with powder cocaine that a lot of young black men ended up in prison. And from there, in prison, they get infected in prison and then come back to the community.
Exactly. And it was disproportionate for people who aren't familiar. The powder cocaine is a white drug. The crack is more of a black drug. So when you crack down disproportionately and make the penalties for crack literally 100 times the penalty for powder cocaine, you're going to create a population in prison that's more black than white. And that's what happened. And yes, it had tremendous health implications, not only for the men, but when they got home, for the women and for the children. And, you know, the young people who are in the film are going to be at the event tonight. They're from Boston and they're very generous with their stories.
And with being so open about it.
Yeah.
Let me just go back to the prisons, because shocking, just for me, maybe others knew this, did not know there was a no condom policy in prison. So that was a shock to you too.
I knew that some prisons get around it. I know that I wouldn't make trouble for Dr. Joyner, but I know that there are doctors who really believe first do no harm, and who try to put the safety of their patients first. But it is a policy almost everywhere, because of that logic, you might be condoning sex by making condoms available. But it's cruel and unusual punishment, isn't it, to not help people protect their health when they're in for, you know, robbing something, a candy bar or something. It's not, doesn't make sense.
So you have a situation where you have cultural silence, mm-hmm. and then really actually over in the context of overall silence about this in the community. And then you have, and that part of that had to do with some churches and pastors particularly, because some of the folks who were infected being gay wanted not to touch that and didn't and remained silent. They became part of that silence. Then you have the drug war situation, the unbalance of the punishment, and now you have, you know, young men in prison, the pipeline, and they come back to the community. And finally, not finally, but this is just another point you make in your film that just took me aback. I hadn't thought about it in great detail. It's a school policy and what young people are taught or not. And because of the strict confines of what they are not taught, they go about their business in an ignorant way and become infected.
Right. Yeah.
I definitely want people to hear this young woman who is in your film, who was a teenager and she just didn't know. So here's a young woman talking about her AIDS diagnosis.
I remember in our wellness book, HIV was a picture of a helpless kid in Africa and also a white, gay, skinny, skinny man. In high school, I was most athletic. My best friend was prom queen. I was a heterosexual, not promiscuous, all-American teenager. I was, you know, just a normal girl. And HIV and normal didn't go together. So I thought.
That was devastating.
She's such a beautiful girl, yeah. Yeah. And she just really blames, she says, my community let me down, my family let me down, you know, and I think it was up to us as a society to protect each other, and we just never have, never stepped forward with the right information. She thought AIDS was a skinny, you know, white gay man. Well, I found that coast to coast. You know, it's true everywhere.
And just to make the point, the numbers of infection in heterosexual black women are quite high.
85% of the women who are infected are heterosexual. So this is not women who are in the street and suffering from drug addiction. This is women who are like us. And I think that's what I wanted to communicate with the film. You can say, but for the grace of God, there go I. You can say all sorts of it. But it really is true. We don't, this could be our stories. Slightly different circumstances. You and I are very lucky. Slightly different circumstances. This is us. Yeah?
And I'm not playing your whole film here because I want people to watch and see it, but there are some other powerful stories by older women who were, in fact, just betrayed, that's not too strong a word, by the men in their lives whom they loved dearly and ended up infected. And they certainly could, as you've just said, be any one of us walking down the street. And they spoke very frankly about, you know, not only what happened to them and how it happened. So in the midst of all this, as you know, there's some tiny awareness about AIDS in general, and certainly AIDS in the black community is happening. A big star is infected. That's Magic Johnson. And he steps forward to say, I have HIV/AIDS. And, you know, there is some reverberation from that, but that at least opens up the door a little bit more. Here's Magic Johnson talking about his AIDS diagnosis.
I have to be honest, at that time, I knew about AIDS and HIV, but I didn't know a lot about it. So, you know, I was like most people, oh, I'm going to die, you know, at the very first, when he first announced it to me, I was like, oh, man, well, I'm going to die. I think it's over. And no, he said, whoa, no, it's not like that. He said, so what we have to do is run a series of tests. But the hardest thing I had to do was tell Cookie. Nothing was more difficult than hurting the person who loved me the most.
So that's Magic Johnson. You know, he's healthy other than that because he has access to all the top medicines, which you should talk about, Renata, because a lot of people say, well, it's over. I mean, look at him. He's walking around okay. He's an example, but yet he's not.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, he's walking around and he's healthy and he takes his medicine every day. I said to him in the interview, people think you're cured. And he said, no. I'm not cured. And that's what's in the film, just him saying, I'm not cured. I'm taking my meds as I am supposed to. And he is taking medication that's available to everyone, to every doctor, I should say, to prescribe to their patients. No, a lot of people don't have access to health care, as you well know. You've covered the issues before. But Magic is not on special pills. And he, like everyone who takes the drugs, has some side effects. They're not fun. People should protect themselves because HIV is not like diabetes. It's not like a drug, something you can take an aspirin. One of the young men, not to get off the subject, but one of the young men in the film at the end told me, I didn't put it in the film, he said, I don't mind taking the drugs. They're like Jolly Ranchers. Well, they're not. Mm. You know, these are very heavy-duty drugs. It's not a cure. Magic's not cured. He has side effects like everyone else. But, boy, if you do it right, you can have a good, strong, long life. And that's what he's hoping for.
Well, to come a little bit full circle in this conversation, the irony is that President Bush put some initiatives in place, and so President Obama's followed up with a program that actually provides these drugs in other parts of the world. But here in this country, still lack of access for this community most beset with this crisis. Why is that?
Oh, Kelly, it's part of why I did the film. I just can't stand it. I'm enough of a patriot, and I, you know, I really believe in this country. I believe in the ideals. And to see that in firsthand, I've been to all these countries around the world, and then to know that there are people in right in our own neighborhoods who don't have access. I just had to do something about it. So hopefully the film will raise awareness and people will push their legislators to make sure that that waiting list, there's a waiting list for drugs in the U.S., make sure that waiting list goes right down to zero. It's just not, it's unconscionable.
So you call the film Endgame, yeah. despite what you've just said. Why Endgame?
Because I do believe I'm an optimist. We have the tools now. We have good drugs. We have awareness. We have people. We have leaders like Julian Bond in the film. We have people who are courageous enough to speak out, tell their stories in a way that will help everyone care about the subject. And I think it's that assemblage of tools that will let us finish this, and we are. I asked Phil Wilson, if this is the end game, who's the quarterback? Mm. And he said, can I think about that? I said, sure, we'll stop the tape. You think. Mm. And then when he was ready, we started the tape again, and he said, the quarterback of the end game is in the mirror every morning.
Mm.
And it was terrific. You know, I think that's true. And you're doing your part so magnificently, and I think there's something we can all do.
Renata Simone, thank you so much.
Callie, thank you for your interest. You've done this for many years, covered this subject. Thank you.
I'm Callie Crossley, and I've been speaking with filmmaker Renata Simone about her new documentary, Frontline's Endgame, AIDS in Black America. You can catch it tomorrow night at 9 on WGBH Channel 2. And tonight at 6:30 at WGBH, there will be a public screening. You can RSVP at WGBH.org. I'm Callie Crossley. Thank you for listening. The conversation continues online at WGBH.org/news and on Facebook. And our address is facebook.com/Boston Public Radio. Please join us again tomorrow from noon to 2 for another edition of Boston Public Radio. We're a production of WGBH.